had a discussion on how it will be addressed. We're not exactly sure. They put a price tag of $31 million on the decision made by the Court of Appeals. And my understanding is that there is a stay on that decision and the possibility of an injunction being filed. Whether that'll be heard again or not, I'm not exactly sure. But right now, it's the law of the land, and no one's exactly sure who is held accountable for the payment of the funds that would take place here. Whether
isn't ultimately the taxpayer accountable?
Ultimately, it is the taxpayer. The question is, the attorneys are signed by the judge, and we're not exactly sure where he sends the bill. My understanding that state's attorneys and state's attorney's offices will also be called up in this, and it could cost them more money locally to fund their state's attorney's office as well. But it's all taxpayers' dollars. In my understanding, I'm not a lawyer, and in this case, I'm very happy not to be a lawyer. But I don't think there's any other state that has this process that the Maryland Court of Appeals ruled. In the state of Maryland. So we can't find any other state in the surrounding area or the federal government.
So in a sense, it's a decision that was unfair.
Well, there, you know, the chief judge was the dissenting judge in this. It was a 4-3 decision. And, you know, it has not been totally adjudicated yet. So we'll see what the final outcome is there.
I hear you've discussed this with the governor and President Miller. Or where do those talks stand?
Yeah, we've had a discussion with about it, and, you know, we're still trying to work our way through, if this takes place, how the state has to deal with it in the budgetary process. So, you know, we're, like we say, it hadn't been totally adjudicated to the best of my knowledge yet, and we'll see where we stand when we get to January.
Let me move to the Health Benefits Exchange website. And as we speak, the governor is going to address that again at a news conference in a little over an hour from now. Right. But what went wrong here? And as you look back on what the General Assembly did, is there anything that could have been done differently? Or is this all really the fault of the people who were put in charge of setting up the website?
Look, I think in hindsight, you'd always like to do some things differently. But, you know, I think we're all disappointed in the way the rollout took place. You know, we hired individuals that, you know, we thought that were going to be able to come up with a website design and the ability for people to sign up. Obviously, there's been some problems here that weren't experienced in places like Kentucky and other places. We do think we have a system with an all-payer system for our hospitals and the healthcare delivery system here. That we should be in the forefront on being able to make this work. Hopefully the glitches in the system are worked out. I know the governor and his staff worked very hard working with some of the contractors that were appointed by the state to see if we can work our way through this. And hopefully, you know, the governor indicates that he's got much of the issues worked out and that we can go forward with the sign-up.
There have been some Democrats who have been critical of Maryland's website. Most recently, Congressman Delaney, who said it should be abandoned and go to the federal site. There have been others critical of, and not just those running against him in the gubernatorial race, critical of Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown's role. Do you think the governor and Lieutenant Governor mishandled this?
Look, I don't want to create judgment on either Congressman Delaney or any of the people that were involved. I think everybody had the best intentions. But the fact of the matter is, with the issue of Congressman Delaney, I think that the states felt very strongly that they would be in control of their own destiny. And I think the states that did a good job of setting up their websites, like I use Kentucky as kind of the model here, have been more successful than the ones that have waited around for the federal government's decisions. And I think the fact that you have a unique system in the state of Maryland, your only state in the union has an all-payer system for the hospitals, that it was appropriate for us to kind of create our own destiny with this. And unfortunately, you know, the vendors that we contracted and weren't what we expected in the final outcome, and you had to go back and deal with it. So, I mean, they're in that process now, and I'm sure the lieutenant governor, the governor, and people like myself and Senator Miller we're disappointed in the process as it's going forward, but we have confidence that it'll be straightened out.
You expect hearings next month in this session on this issue?
Sure. I certainly expect the chairman of Health and Government Operations to have hearings, at the beginning of session to talk about the status, where it is now, what the expectations are in the future, what some of the issues were that caused the problems.
What questions do you want him to ask? What questions do you think remain unanswered?
Look, I think, part of it is, what were the flaws that we encountered that no one expected, number one, and whose responsibility was that? And were those flaws corrected? And where do we stand currently, and where do you expect to be a year from now? I think, anything of this magnitude always has to work out as glitches. I don't think Medicare or Social Security, when they were put into effect, went without any kind of problems. And I just think that, people have to give this a little bit of time. And, hopefully that, like Medicare and Social Security, a few years from now, it'll be something that's beneficial to most Americans.
Let me move to another subject, raising the minimum wage. You heard what Montgomery and Prince George's County did. I know this has been attempted a number of years in the General Assembly. It's never, I think the Senate Finance Committee was where the bill died last year. Right. Is this the year the General Assembly raises the minimum wage, and are you going to follow the lead of PG and Montgomery or go to a lower rate? What are you?
Well, first of all, I think the fact that two of your major subdivisions raise the minimum wage is the first time it sets a precedent, obviously. We've never had counties set their own minimum wage until now. And evidently, legally, they have the ability to do it. And, both of them basically pass the same minimum wage mm-hmm. with a caveat in there or a clause in there that says that they will always be a dollar higher than the state's minimum wage. So, it does present somewhat of a dilemma. Of coming up with a statewide minimum wage, but it does speak to the issue that, different areas of the state have different cost of livings and different challenges. Certainly Garrett County and Somerset County, aren't as wealthy as places like Montgomery. And
that's not unprecedented with the living wage. The living wage for government contracts, I know that it's higher in PG and Montgomery County and Baltimore City than it is elsewhere in the state.
Well, same with prevailing wage.
I think it was what you wanted,
and that's depends on what the contractors are at the time and what the average wage is there. But I think the state will certainly take a look. We'll be in economic matters. Chairman Davis is well acquainted with the minimum wage laws, and it'll be back in finance. It's a question whether we set a baseline minimum wage that is appropriate.
What's reasonable? Is it $10 an hour? Is it?
Well, that's the determination of the General Assembly, and I think one of the things you want to find out is, does every county have the right to raise their own minimum wage? Is it only the purview of charter counties? Do you set a baseline minimum wage and let every county determine whether they want to be above that or not? So, there's a baseline across the state, and Somerset wants to stay with the baseline. And Baltimore City wants to go up to, $11.50 an hour, like Prince George's and Montgomery. They would have the ability to do that, I'm assuming. I remember the chairman of the delegation saying this was their number one priority, was to raise the minimum wage. I'm certain that somewhere along the line, Baltimore City would take up the minimum wage debate as well. But it really brings in the focus that if the state passes a baseline minimum wage still gives counties the ability to raise it, and that's kind of unprecedented. And the dilemma is, if you wanted to, put a stop to that, it would be a pretty tough negotiating point at this stage. And I don't know exactly how you do that.
I've also heard that some tax cuts are going to be considered this year. Corporate tax, I've heard corporate tax, and Republicans want a 10% income tax cut. What's on the table with respect to that?
Well, I think with corporate taxes, there's the big debate about lowering the corporate tax rate. Maryland actually is in pretty reasonable territory in that particular tax. I mean, Washington, D.C. is about 9.9. Mm-hmm. New Jersey's over 9. Delaware is even higher than we are there, about 9%. Mm-hmm. West Virginia has lowered their corporate tax rate, but they have also included combined reporting. So I think the fact that they lowered it to 6% means that they, and combined reporting, it's basically a revenue-neutral bill. We're currently 8.25, which is almost a full point below most of the surrounding states except Virginia. So there's other business taxes they have in Virginia that we may not have here. But the corporate tax rate, I think, you know, when you start talking about that, lowering it, I think there's going to be a lot of legislators that also want to include combined reporting with lowering of the corporate tax. I mean, the income tax, I think about 88% of Marylanders pay 4.75 to the state, and it varies from county to county. And any county who wants to lower their piggyback tax can do that right currently. I mean, we always go out to some of the counties that have low property taxes and high piggyback tax. They can go up to 3.20 on their piggyback. They can reduce that any time and find another way to raise revenues on the local level. You have that ability to do that. I mean, the piggyback tax runs anywhere from 1.25% in Worcester County to 3.20 in Prince George's and Montgomery County to 2.50 in Anne Arundel. So there's different areas. And I mean, I think that a lot of times you give local discretion. But, I mean, for the state, 88% of the state citizens pay 4.75, which was lowered about 10 years ago from 5% to 4.75. So I think that's a pretty fair average.
What else is on your agenda for 2014?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, coming out of the recession here, I think the best thing that's happened currently is the fact that the federal government has come to a budget agreement for the next 2 years to create stability in the marketplace, and that with the federal government coming up with that budget negotiation and the idea of what's being sequestered, what's not being sequestered, that there'll be no more government shutdowns for 2 years gives everybody a little more confidence. And I think once you have consumer confidence out there and they start to spend, I think that helps. I think we have a pretty good tax structure when the economy rebounds. I think Maryland will be well positioned. And I think at that time there can be consideration of some tax reductions. I do think that you'll see an area of tax incentives where there'll be tax credit for things like cybersecurity, the fastest growing industry in the state of cybersecurity. You have a task force coming back headed up by Britt Kerwin at the University of Maryland. Ford Meade is the largest employer of the state with 53,000 employees, and right down the road at the National Business Park is 17,000 employees. So there's 70,000 employees there. Cybersecurity is a huge issue. Biotechnology is a huge issue. We've done very well with the biotechnology tax credits. We hope to increase the cybersecurity tax credits. And we're hopeful that with the transportation revenues that we'll be able to entice the FBI headquarters to Greenbelt in Prince George's County, which will mean 13,000 jobs there from the FBI headquarters, as well as another 7,000 jobs that will be ancillary to that project.
Another tax I've heard a lot of discussion in the off season about is the so-called rain tax, and there are some, mostly it's on the Republican side, but there are some Democrats who are calling for this to be either scaled back, delayed, anything like that, or even eliminated.
Well, first of all, it's a federal directive. I mean, the federal government directed us to come up with a stormwater management plan to eliminate the pollution to the Chesapeake Bay, or at least create some effort to stop stormwater from going into the Chesapeake Bay. In the discussions we had over a period of a couple of years, the debate with the counties through the Maryland Association of Counties, it's limited to 10 counties in the state of Maryland, the ones either close to the bay or have a certain population. And we let the county set their own fees. So currently, I mean, counties like Anne Arundel, which is a pretty conservative county, has voted on this twice.
Yep.
And both times passed a storm water management fee that they feel comfortable with in Anne Arundel County. I mean, Anne Arundel County had to shut down and put warnings out to close beaches because of the stormwater runoff at least a half dozen times in the last year.
Several times just this past summer, too.
Right. Prince George's County passed a fee. Montgomery County had one into effect. City of Annapolis has one. Howard County has passed one. Just about every county has taken it up. The only one that's kind of an outlier is Frederick. And they decided to go with like a dollar, which is not going to pass muster at the federal level, and would probably bring some kind of fine down from there. But it's a federal directive. The states took it up with sensitivity to the counties in mind. We let the counties set their own fees and how they would enforce them. When people talk about, you know, having local government have oversight, there's, you know, no better example than this. And then somebody coined the name rain tax rather than the stormwater management bill to clean up the Chesapeake Bay. And then it became an issue, particularly going into an election year. But I think for the most part, this issue has been settled at the local level. And I don't know why people think they're going to go back and revisit this. I mean, it was overwhelmingly passed in the Senate and the House.
One more question. This one of the things of the 2013 session was described as by one of your colleagues as frantic because there were a lot of major bills that were passed. You had the gun bill, the death penalty repeal, the transportation bill. Is 2014 going to be less frantic?
I think it's going to be more challenging. This is the first time that you will have the primary moved from September to June.
And that's had an impact on all delegates, I mean, in terms of fundraising. I mean, they can't raise money after
January 8th. You can't raise money during the session. So they either raise it before, or they raise it right after session before the June primary. But the fact of the matter is a lot of them will be running for office while they're in session, and they'll be splitting their time. The following deadline is February 25th. People know who's running against them or who's not running against them. And then in my chamber in the House, there are seven people running statewide, two for governor, two for lieutenant governor, and three for attorney general. There's no fewer than 10 that are running for the Senate. There's about 10 that are retiring, and there's about 10 that are running for different offices out there. So there'll probably be a turnover in the mid-30s in the Maryland House of Delegates over the next term.
Delegate Dwyer, who I know is going to be continuing to serve his sentence during the session, should he even be in office? I mean, I know there's really little, if anything, the General Assembly can do to remove him, but
should he
be there?
Look, I think, you know, he has not created any offense against the General Assembly or has not committed a felony. He has had a pattern of practice with the abuse of alcohol and driving boats and driving cars. And it is built into a sentence that where he has to serve time on the weekends. I personally believe once lawmakers start serving time and incarcerated, that that ought to be the key signal for them to step down from public office. But the fact of the matter, law does not support my opinion. I do think that the delegate, and I don't want to get into any of the personal issues, but I think you know, there are some issues there that he needs to get some help with. I think his attorneys and anyone else would do that. I mean, I certainly would wish him the best in that regard. I mean, I don't have any this is not a personal issue. I have a good relationship with Delegate Dwyer. Even though we're totally different in our political philosophies, I think, you know, he brings an honesty to his approach to the General Assembly. But I just think when you're out there representing the general public and you're putting in bills that deal with public safety and things of that nature, and you end up breaking the law, I think it's time to reconsider whether you should be in public office or not.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.